Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to Tribe Family Channel. Suicide is not the answer. I am Beverly Black, and I will be moderating this third episode. My guest is Anita Dickerson Knox, and I am honored beyond measure to say it is a pleasure to have her here. She is a survivor, having once thought about it, but those are my words. I'm ad-libbing. She is here to tell her own story. And if any one of you out there has ever given suicide a thought, I want you to please, please, please reconsider. You can call this number, 347-539-5285, when I am on the air, and I would be happy to talk to you. Please look in the phone book or through the internet for the resources in your area and in your zip code for suicide prevention hotlines. I will be doing my best, to bring people to these airwaves that have survived and can tell you how they're doing, how they got through. And for myself, my brother committed suicide when I was 17 years old. That was 51 years ago. My heart is still broken. But when I listened to Michael Jackson saying, "You are not alone," and I took in those words, it felt so good because I don't feel alone. But I want everyone within the sound of my voice to know that there is purpose in your life. And whatever you're fighting to do, to live, and walk out that purpose, I want you to take somebody by the hand and keep fighting. Because you are not alone. Welcome, Anita. How are you, Queen?
I am so good. How are you?
I am so blessed. And like I said, it is an honor and a pleasure for you to be here. I want to thank you again for taking out the time. I know that you're a mother. I'm a mother. Happy early Mother's Day to you. And just thank you for borrowing some time away from your family and your young ones, you know, to spend time with us. Now, if for any reason your call should drop, simply call right back. I will see your number in the studio. If for any reason your child needs you, hey, this is Tribe Family Channel, and you can tend to that, and we'll accommodate whatever it is that we need to accommodate. But for now, it's just really about being comfortable and relaxed and being able to tell people your story of survivorship. I know a little bit about what you testified on the woman at the well, on the woman at the well. So here on Suicide is Not the Answer, take me back to the time when you considered suicide when the rainbow wasn't enough. And we do give a nod out to the literary work for young girls who considered suicide when the rainbow wasn't enough. And you can Google that. It's available. But we have a young lady here, and she hung on. So tell us your story.
Well, my story started back in my hometown in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. I was going to elementary school / middle school. It was both elementary and middle school together, and it started 7th and 8th grade as far as me being bullied. And this was an entire class that was attacking me for some reason. I couldn't figure out why they didn't like me for some reason. You know, it started with them not standing next to me in line, It was always a gap in the middle line between me and the rest of the kids. And then they started making up lies on me, which got me detention after detention. I even got suspended once because of lies. And I think the rock bottom for me was mainly during recess. Is when, because one of my favorite things to do during recess is to play basketball. It's something I still love to do. And you know, I saw the, you know, the girls playing basketball, and I asked them to play with them, and they literally got in a circle in front of me and debated whether I should be in the game or not because they didn't like me. And when they were done, they basically told me that I had to leave. So that broke my heart into like a million pieces. So yeah, recess wasn't far for me. I felt like I couldn't go into nowhere. I did tell a teacher about what was going on, but I felt like the teachers were treating me like they were, and I didn't really get no help out of them. And so, you know, I felt alone most of the time, and I really didn't know what to do as far as that. And one day I decided that enough was enough, and I just wanted to end it. And I wrote a suicide note to my math teacher, letting her know that I was going to kill myself and how I was going to do it. And I handed it to her. And I went outside to recess. I sat on the hill by myself, and something came over me. I don't know what it was, but I had to think twice about it, and thankfully I did not do it.
Thankfully cannot be expressed and said enough. Thankfully. Now, did you want to continue, or do you want me, because I know I jumped in here, but I just wanted to join you with thankfully.
Yeah, I just feel like that, you know, a lot of those kids don't understand, you know, what you go through when you are going through something like that, because they don't really understand the heartbreak of what they're doing. Because I never told anybody about the suicide besides my teacher. My own parents don't even know. And it was something that you keep to yourself, or you tell somebody, and then it's just like, you just feel like, you know, you don't have nobody to turn to, and you sit there and think to yourself that, you know, you untried everything. You can't try anymore. You know, what else is there to do?
I want to thank you so much for being so honest and transparent, and God bless your heart. I'm so glad for the strength, for the power and the spirit that came over you sitting over there, and now in your adulthood, about to celebrate Mother's Day, and you have a child. Now you can look back and see that not one of those voices out of any of those mouths back then mattered. What was destined for your life and the beauty, you're an author, and the beauty that unfolded in your path, there is so much purpose in that. It's like a budding flower, starting young, that bud, and it's green, and you don't know the beauty inside. And then it just starts to bud and blossom and grow and develop. And now a flower has flowers. Happy Mother's Day early again. And so I just commend you for your strength and your courage to not go through with it, because, you know, when you look at the other side of the letter, people can tell you something and then be so convicted to keep their word instead of saying, well, I've decided not to go through with it. People can get so caught up on keeping their word about something, even though they may have changed their mind about it. Now they're, instead of being bound to the original decision, having changed their mind, they can shift over and feel bound to the promise that someone else is holding in that decision. So you said you were going to take this action. That's within that expectancy, and it's good that you didn't shift over to, well, I gave my word, because when you give your word, it's a promise, and you put it out there, and then the expectancy is then in the universe. So to draw that back, that takes a lot of strength and courage as well, because people always seem to lean to what others may think about them. So I'm glad you didn't take that route and begin to wonder, well, what would your math teacher think about you if you didn't go through with it and feel bound to any decisions like that? Thank God something came over you. Now, let me ask you this. Did your math teacher, what did your math teacher do? I mean, obviously, for you to leave his or her presence and be on that hill alone definitely shows that they didn't follow you outside. So what did, if anything, he or she do or say?
All she did was she set me down and had me explain to her how, she asked me how I was going to do it, and I told her how I was going to do it, and she tried to comfort me, but, like, it wasn't working because I really didn't like the teacher, and So she just kind of left it at that on that day. The one thing I didn't tell her was when I was going to do it. So I didn't really talk to her about anymore about how I felt, because, like I said, I felt like, you know, she was one of the teachers that treated me like the rest of the kids were. So I didn't really confide all the way in her.
Okay. Now, the fact that you were in middle school, did you have other teachers that taught other subjects? Because you said this was your math teacher. And I'm wanting to know, you did have other teachers?
I did. We did change classes. I did have a science teacher and a reading teacher and a social studies teacher, yes.
Okay. So you had the same kind of education that I had, you know, the basics.
Yeah.
So what made you choose that particular individual? Was the abuses and the bullying happening in her class, and so that led to giving her the letter because, you know, she was partially at fault for not recognizing what was happening in the environment in which she's teaching children?
It happened in all my classes. Mainly, it was happening more in hers. I wanted to confront her too, as far as why I wrote the letter to her, because I wanted her to understand, you know, where I was at, mentally, because you know, it was also to let her know that, you know, she wasn't doing enough, and I felt like that she wasn't doing enough, and that And I didn't really like being treated the way I was treated, and, you know, they weren't lending that helping hand that I needed, even though I trust them to do that, but I have never received the help that I think that teacher should give once a student has tell them that they're going to commit suicide. So that was a way for me to not only tell her what I was mentally, but to basically let her know that she wasn't doing her job.
Indeed, indeed. And I think that's just beyond reprehensible for the dialogue to even center around how are you going to do it. One, that's a question that you would want someone to not bring up because you're wanting to talk someone out of it, so you don't want to, you know, embellish and discuss ways and means to do it. So that's reprehensible all in itself. I agree with you that teachers should be supportive in the area in which if a child brings you a letter, that's an alarm. And if you're in the field of teaching and you're there for people's children, if the alarm goes off, you're the fire department. You are supposed to be the first responder. And that response for help is supposed to be life and a life-saving attempt. And that's not something you give up on. So when you said she wasn't doing enough, what are some of the suggestions? Fast forward, because I know today you're in activism and anti-bullying and an author and a speaker. So let's fast forward the conversation to Anita today, who you are today, who you blossomed into today. Tell our listeners who Anita is, and then let's talk about some of the suggestions that you have learned along your journey to help others in your activism and the anti-bullying piece. So who is Anita Dickerson Knox for our listeners that don't know who you are today?
Well, I am just a happy free spirit. I love to write. My writing process did start in school, which I'm thankful for, and I've been writing ever since then. I just like to, I mainly like to help people. I don't hesitate to help somebody in need. Like if, you know, whether it's a homeless person or somebody that's need help as far as mothering or anything like that, I don't hesitate to help because, you know, we all been there. And so I make it my goal to give back. I'm just the type of person that I'm very social. I love meeting people, having a good conversation just about anything, whether it's a book or a church or whatever it might be. I also I love being a speaker because it allows me to connect to what other kids that are dealing with this today, because unfortunately it has not gone away and it has gotten worse since I was in school. Which is a big, big problem because a lot of kids are actually dying now and committed suicide, and it's just sad to see that on TV every day. And something has to be done with it about it because, like I said, you know, teachers, I think they need to do more in the schools. If this is happening, if this has gotten worse, that means they have not done, they're still not doing their job, which is very sad, and it has to be. It's a problem that has to be, you know, canceled out immediately because, you know, we're losing our kids, and, you know, this is a time for them to enjoy their kid, their teenage years, or, you know, and they shouldn't have to struggle the way they are because, you know, you should go to school to learn and not to, you know, feel like you don't belong, which I think is a very big problem. You know, I think people forgot the whole process of school. Period, and that's something that we need to get back.
Indeed, I totally agree with you 100% on that, and I would go so far as to say it's not, you know, entirely on the school. And although our youth spend so much time in school, away from home, it's certainly an integral part of our upbringing, but certainly the entire responsibility is shared amongst community, parenting, family, and being able to openly and honestly come boldly and let people know what is going on with you. So what would you say are some of the signs that the teachers are missing? Because now we have to factor in sometimes things are going on at home, and there are actually caring teachers out there that don't know what's going on. And if they did, they wouldn't hesitate to step in and lend a hand. They have a loving heart like you. They're ready to help someone, but they're not seeing the signs. The students outnumber the teachers. People wear masks and pretend everything's okay, put on makeup, quote unquote. So what are we missing? Be it in the educational system, be it at home, or be it out in the community. What are our eyes and ears missing?
Well, in my situation, I was always alone, so I didn't really interact with any other kids, so I was always alone. Anger has a lot to do with it. Sometimes, you know, we act out of anger because, you know, nothing is being done, and you know that's our way of removing ourselves from the situation altogether. Another thing is sadness. You know, a lot of times we do cry, you know, whether it's in the classroom, during recess, or at lunch. Sometimes our emotions get the best of us, and, you know, we just let it out sometimes. And another thing is if they're looking down constantly, you know, they're not really making eye contact. Even when you're speaking directly to them, they don't make any kind of eye contact or, you know, show signs of that they're actually listening. And that they are constantly getting into trouble, or if they're constantly telling you you know how they feel. Most kids do that too. I have been doing that, telling teachers how I feel mentally. That's another sign that, you know, something is going on, especially if they do it every day.
Okay. Well, we definitely need to be more aware of these signs, and thank you so much. These were very important points to know and take in and observe and be aware of so that we can help in any way that we can as a community. Now, the biggest one for me that stands out the most is when you see someone alone. And I'm the type of person that when I see someone alone, or I see a situation where, here again, that person is vulnerable to some degree, I'm most concerned in those situations enough to speak up and say something. Like they say, you see something, you say something. And I'll ask someone in a heartbeat if they're all right. Are you okay? Do you need, you know, one, do they need to call anyone or need help? And I just had for instance, just this month, there was a Hispanic older woman sitting by the postal annex, and she had her bag and she was sitting there, and She wasn't crying, but she wasn't smiling, and she wasn't engaged in anything. And I did ask her, was she all right? And, of course, we had a language barrier. Not of course, but we had a language barrier because she spoke Spanish and I speak English. And I haven't utilized my broken Spanish in 26 years. But I tried no less, even more of an effort, just to make sure that she was okay and did she need, like, anyone or to call anyone, the telephone use or anything. But I left feeling as though she were okay. Now, that's one act of when you see someone alone. But, of course, we're talking about, as an example of when you were growing up in school and what we can do in the community as a whole and at the schoolyard. I want to encourage parents to spend more time at your child's school, spend more time finding out what is, you know, what your child's activities are and the people that your children hang around with. And if you're finding that your children don't have anyone to spend their time with at school, be an advocate for finding like-minded youth or even starting some type of activity that the youth can come together and spend time growing. And like you said, I need the, you know, you think people have forgotten what going to school is for. And I here again can agree with you on that as well. We need to refocus and come back to the main thing and the particular foundational reason for having the external educational system where we send our children to learn. Again, I also bring it back to the home front. We as parents have to be extremely cognizant of our child's growth, development, activities, interactions, and their, you know, overall health. And so it starts at home, and then it spreads outward. So thank you for those great suggestions on what we can look for. Now, tell me more about the work that you do with the, you know, anti-bullying. I know you're an author, and we had you on the book club hub. Your book is not the topic that we're discussing this afternoon, but again, I commend you, no doubt, for your book and continuing to write and following your passion, knowing that writing and basketball go hand in hand with you. That would be interesting if you wrote a book about basketball, about women's basketball, perhaps even the WBA. You know, I could see something like that. But
I am. I'm actually writing a WNBA series.
Oh, wow. What? Wow. Well, you know what? You keep me posted about that, because if I didn't just hit the nail on the nose that I didn't even know about, you know, that is pretty good. Hang on one second. Let me just ask you what type of bullying type work you may be doing.
Well, number one is, I noticed that a lot of kids that are being bullied now, they like to make videos, whether it's on YouTube or Facebook. And me, I personally answered those videos with a video of my own, letting them know that, you know, they're not alone and that, you know, there's ways that you can bring yourself out of that situation, whether it's cyberbullying, which is also a big problem as well. And I just remind kids that people are going to talk about you regardless, and you just have to find your purpose, even though, you know, the world seems like it's against you, you know. I remind them that, you know, their very existence is not a mistake. They're here for a reason, and that we need them, and just like they need themselves, and that you know, you just have to arise above all the hate and be who you put on this earth to be. You know, I mean, you can't let nobody stop your shine, because it's always going to be somebody that's going to stop your shine. And it's not just kids. And when you get a dog, you're going to have other adults do the same thing. And if you decide to commit suicide, I'm just here to tell you it's not going to work, because, you know, people are going to talk about you even when you're dead. So it's not really going to solve your problem. And you don't really want to bring that heartache to your family. You know, somebody that's actually there for you, because, you know, your family, they try to be there as much as they can, but they only can be there for you for things that they actually know. So for those kids who are afraid to talk to their parents, I encourage them to talk to their parents, because, you know, they've been through this themselves, and they will be happy to help you more, you know. And you'd be surprised of what they can do that you're unable to do yourself. And sometimes you need that, you know, in your life. You know, if you can't do it yourself, you need somebody to help fight for you, you know. So I encourage kids to do, you know, to not be afraid to talk to their parents, whether it's a big sister, big brother, you know. It's somebody that you actually trust that can understand your situation, so they can be there for you, you know. And so I try to reach out to those kids as much as possible, and let them know that cries are being heard mainly.
Wow. And you made such a profound point. Talk to your parents, because people cannot help you if they don't know. And we, as humans, we can tend to be apprehensive about who we can share something deep and sensitive, who we can share that with. And humans can be insensitive enough to not be trustworthy enough to be trusted to handle something sensitive. So even if it's not within the home where you can reach out and get help, because we have trouble in the home. Everyone is hurting and healing from something. And I will repeat that. Everyone is hurting and healing from something. And that is my own quote, by the way. I didn't read that anywhere or pick it out of a book. Just so we know that I will be repeating that, because I believe that wholeheartedly. So knowing that, I don't care where you reach, but be able to stir up enough strength to reach outside of your pain and find someone that you can actually feel their energy and say, you know, I think that I can possibly open up and say this is happening to me. This is what's going on. It's been driving me to feeling suicidal. I have a life to live and don't want to go down that route, that path. Like you said, we all have purpose. And so we have, to continue to encourage each other, like you have done so eloquently here, to reach out and mainly look for a helping hand to help us through any pain that we may be experiencing that would lead us to those thoughts and that aloneness, that isolation. So I want to remind our listeners, you're tuned in to Suicide is Not the Answer. I'm Beverly Black. I'm the creator of Tribe Family Channel, a Gumbo for the Soul international family brand, and I am speaking with Anita Dickerson Knox. Suicide is not the answer. My brother decided to go that route when I was just 17 years old, and that was January 22nd, 1977. I was unable to do any more school assignments. I was a senior in high school, and I remember going to my counselor and just letting her know there won't be anything else that I am able to commit to work-wise, study-wise here. And I am now requesting to be graded at this point that I am at right now. Grade me at this level so that I can graduate and walk that stage on June 15th, one day before my birthday in 1977, and I did walk the stage and graduate, but the time between that period of time was about as daisy and hazy and foggy and hurtful, and I was a bundle of nerves that felt like everything was wrong with me. I was hurt down to my core, and I felt like the small town and the friends that I grew up with thought that there was something disturbingly wrong with me. I had to be just disturbingly, if that's a word, disturbed for suicide to have befallen my family. What type of family am I from? My brother was my best friend. My best friend. And I miss him just as much today as then. It took 51 years to the date of his death for me to launch Suicide Is Not the Answer here on Tribe Family Channel. Although I did squeeze out in my book, A Wretch Like Me from Crack Addict to Change Agent, remembrances of us growing up and the things that, you know, we experienced. He was my best friend. We had lots of joyful times, sharing, caring. I am a daddy's girl and grew up with uncles and cousins and always validated, never violated. And so my father had the two of us, and it nearly took everything out of him. I felt like the world had closed in and had all eyes on me. You know, what is wrong with that Beverly? To my now wavering thoughts, that is what they all seemed to wonder while I contended with the butterflies in my stomach. What happened to her brother shows she has some real issues. That's what I said in my book. Like I said, I was able to graduate. Depression did become my comforter. On and off, it remained throughout my adulthood until I was about 50 years old. And this depression was lifted in 2010 by God's grace. I left that depression behind in, I remember, July, around July 2009, I'm sorry, 2010. By then, now my father, who passed in 2009, had gone on and gone home to be with the Lord. So just wanted to thank you again for sharing this time and strength and good words with me and allowing me to do the same with you and our audience. Now, I want to remind everyone that there are resources within your zip code, and you can go online, you can Google, and you can even look in a telephone book that was perhaps thrown on your porch one day And there are resources, and there is a suicide hotline number. So please, you know, reach out for help and just look for that purpose. Like you said, Anita, we all have a purpose. We all have a gift. And so you continue to utilize your gift and that gift of writing. Now you have a lot of things that are on the forefront. What are some of the tools that you would encourage someone when it comes to writing that you may have used to help you overcome in your journey as an overcomer who didn't attempt to do the act of taking your life but thought about it so seriously until that blessed day when something came over you? But from then, what are some of the tools that you were able to incorporate in your life and share whether any of that encompassed your writing?
Well, I was the type of person that always wrote how I felt. So I encourage everybody to just, like, you know, write how you feel. You know, whether it's a story or a short story or poem, you know, because somebody's going to read it and understand where you're coming from, and they're going to be like, and they're going to, you know, receive from that, and it's probably going to help them out. You know, you're going to help somebody out without even knowing that you're helping. So it's always good to pour your heart out in anything that you do. Mine just happened to be writing. I'm glad that I was able to do that because, you know, I felt like, you know, everybody needed to know the pain that it caused, the depression that it caused, you know, and what to do about it if they ever feel that same way. So I'm glad I was able to get that out. Sometimes you can't keep it in. You got to get it out somehow, you know, whether it's through music or writing or whatever it may be.
Wow, wow. And journaling, you know, some people may experience journaling as a way of expressing themselves, but you know, just getting it out and walking in your truth. I like what you said about write about how you feel. Always, you know, be real with how you feel. That's how you walk in your truth, and ultimately, walking in your truth is embracing the true essence of who you are. And so when you walk in that truth, there's so much strength in that. So I commend you for walking in your truth. I commend you for the tools and the resources that have brought you such a very mighty long way. You're very gifted, talented, beautiful. You're a mother. Happy Mother's Day. And most of all, you carry a message, a strong message to the world of hope, light, and love. So if anyone wants to find out about Anita, where would they go online to purchase your books and get in touch and stay connected with you?
You can find my book on Amazon.com. You can find me on Facebook at Author Knox. I also have a YouTube channel, which is Author Anita Dickerson Knox. And I do have an Instagram and a LinkedIn, which is also under the name Author Anita Dickerson Knox.
Well, we will definitely continue to stay in touch with you. And I want to thank you for, again, taking out your time to spend and to share, like I said, strength, love, hope, resources, and tools. And most of all, the pleasure of knowing that you are a survivor, that you gave thought to something, but you knew the answer wasn't that. And here you are still today with us. Ladies and gentlemen, suicide is not the answer. Anitha Dickerson Knox, thank you once again for your time, your talent, and we will continue to follow and stay connected with you. And ladies and gentlemen, you can reach me. I am Beverly Black, a.k.a. Beverly Black Johnson. I'm the creator of Gumbo for the Soul Publications, Gumbo for the Soul Literacy Program, Tribe Family Channel, and they are all Gumbo for the Soul International family brands. We are at GumboForTheSoulInternational.com. We're on Facebook.com/Tribe Family Channel, Twitter at Gumbo for the Soul, also Twitter at Tribe Family US, on LinkedIn, Instagram, Historically Black College and University, HBCUConnect.com, and you can also reach us on Google Plus. If you're interested in being a guest on our show, email me, Tribe Family Channel, that's T-R-I-B-E, familychannel@gmail.com. Tribe stands for talent, respect, inspiration, beauty, empowerment. And I welcome you to share yours with me and our listeners. So thank you so much once again, Anitha. You have yourself a very, very blessed, happy Mother's Day. And if you're so inclined, please tune in tomorrow at the same time, same Tribe Family Channel. And we will be having a very special show honoring the women that raised us on Women of Honor. So be blessed. Happy, happy Mother's Day, and continue to do what you can do, your own part, to heal the world. All right?
All right. You have a good day.
All right.
Mother, thank you all now.
And thank you so much. God bless you, sweetie.
Right back at you.
About the generations, and to say we want to make it a better place for our children and our children's children, so that they know it's a better world for them, and think they can make it a better place.
There's a place in your heart, and I know that it is love. Brighter than tomorrow. And if you really try, you'll find there's no need to cry. In this place, you feel there's no hurt or sorrow. There are ways to get there. If you care enough for the living, make a little space.